5058.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. This is Anna Cunningham. The British boxer Daniel Dubois has knocked out Anthony Joshua to defend his IBF World Heavyweight title at Wembley. 96,000 fans watched him knock the former champion to the canvas multiple times over five rounds. Dubois' promoter Frank Warren paid tribute to the loser.
It takes two people to make a fight like that, a great champion and AJ. AJ absolutely contributed, showed his heart right to the end, but it was just a brilliant, brilliant fight, and obviously I'm pleased because my man's won and I've had faith in him from the beginning. I always felt he would do it, and he's done it.
Sir Keir Starmer said he'll take responsibility for leaks coming from his government, which he says damage everybody. It emerged this week that his top adviser, Sue Gray, was paid more than him amid signs of disquiet in his top ranks. The Prime Minister was speaking ahead of Labour's first party conference in government in 15 years. The leader of the Unite Union, Sharon Graham, says she'll use the conference to try to persuade Sir Keir to scrap plans to remove the winter fuel payment from most pensioners.
The Tories have left an absolute mess. The economy is in a mess. But what I'm saying is that there are different choices to be made. You've got the richest 50 families in Britain worth £500 billion. Why not do something there instead of taking this money off pensioners? It's a cruel policy and they need to do a U-turn.
The Crown Prosecution Service says it considered bringing charges against the former Harrods owner Mohammed Al-Fayed twice, but on both occasions it concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. More than 100 women have come forward with allegations of being sexually assaulted or raped by the billionaire who died last year. Israel has imposed restrictions on civilian movements in the north of the country in case Hezbollah retaliates for airstrikes in southern Lebanon. Reports from the West Bank say Israeli forces have ordered the broadcaster Al Jazeera to close its office in Ramallah for 45 days. Kamala Harris has challenged Donald Trump to a second debate in the run-up to November's presidential election. The Democratic candidates accepted an invitation from CNN for another head-to-head next month, but speaking at a campaign rally in North Carolina, Mr. Trump ruled it out.
The problem with another debate is that it's just too late. Voting has already started. She's had her chance to do it with Fox. You know, Fox invited us on, and I waited and waited, and they turned it down. They turned it down. But now she wants to do a debate right before the election with CNN because she's losing badly.
And the social media platform X has agreed to comply with court orders in Brazil, where its services were suspended last month. Elon Musk's company will reportedly block the accounts of hundreds of users accused of spreading disinformation. BBC News.
I'm Kim Cattrall, and I want to tell you about my new podcast, a new audio drama telling the history of the CIA from the inside out.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
He's got to convince Congress to give him an open checkbook now.
America has suffered its worst domestic attack of the 20th century at Pearl Harbor.
How do we make contact with the NKGB?
Central Intelligence, starring me, Kim Cattrall, Ed Harris, and Johnny Flynn.
There's $50,000 in it for you if you say yes.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Lisa McCormick.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Do you want to talk about dementia? Do you want to talk about toys, must-have toys? Do you want to talk about strange places that you've had a date? Thank you for your calls so far. Keaton coming in. I'm Lisa McCormick. We're talking, of course, through the night here on 5 Live. We're here until 5 o'clock, 0808 509 693. We're talking about weird places you've been on dates. This is after Diane Abbott released her memoir a week or two ago, and in it she describes a brief romance that she had with Jeremy Corbyn. Now, she says, and I'll read this paragraph to you. Once, after I lamented our lack of social activity as a couple, he pondered it for a few days and told me we were going out. Feeling excited, I dressed up nicely and we bundled into the car. I had no idea where we were going. Maybe it was a nice wine bar. Turns out Jeremy's idea of a social idea was to drive me to Highgate Cemetery and proudly show me the tomb of Karl Marx. Now, you probably can't beat a graveyard as a strange place for a date, or a rather unique date maybe in itself. But maybe you have a similar story about strange dates. I'd love to hear them. 0808 5909 693 on the phone. We're talking toy crazes as well. Tamagotchis are coming back. Do you remember them? They were shaped like eggs. They had a really primitive little digital screen, and it was a virtual pet. You had to try and keep them alive by feeding them and giving them water and playing with them and talking to them. They were the hottest toy to hit the shelves in Christmas 1997. So I want to know what you travelled the country for your own kids, your grandkids, what you really wanted as a child. Did you get it? Or did you actually not get it? And sometimes now you think back and you think, oh, I would have liked that. I'd love your story on that as well. 0808 5 909 693 or text me 85058. And I also want your experiences with dementia as well. 5 minutes past three. Let's speak to Peter in Macclesfield. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm very well, and I loved the amazing gentleman. I think it was Mike from Oldham.
Yes, yes.
Do you know he's blind?
I do know he's blind, yes. I do.
Did he mention that?
He didn't, but he's mentioned it previously on the programme.
I see. Because he used to be on the Alan Bezick show, and Detective Mike got me right. Because I am Ed Bond and Spreadsheet Pete.
I told you, Matt. Matt, I said to Matt, producer, I said, is this Spreadsheet Pete? And he's like, oh, I'm not sure.
Well, I think it is. I put on Yorkshire accent when I'm Ed Bond, even though he lives in Hope in Derbyshire. Don't we all live in Hope, don't we?
I am. No, we didn't.
So
he's the same person.
Got me.
I'm talking to Matt as if he's in the same room and you can hear him. That's the same person, Matt. It is the same. Do the accent, Peter. Do the accent.
Hello, it's Ed Bond here. And do you know, I broke down last week driving to Buxton in the middle of the night watching the eclipse, speaking to Don Adebayo. And the guy who came to rescue me said, why are you calling yourself Ed?
I told him, Spreadsheet Pete. Matt says he's never talking to you ever again, Peter.
Oh,
that's
come
it.
On. I You're done. You, so you know I do.
Oh, fantastic.
Well,
there you go, Michael.
I want to talk about toys, and I want to briefly touch on not so much dementia, but looking after my mum and my dad and how brilliant he was. But this also involves my dad. Yeah. Do you remember a magazine called Looking for Kids?
No, I don't, actually.
It was like a bit like the TV Times, but it only did ITV and Channel 4, I think, later.
Right.
But the very first edition, which was advertised on the telly, had a free toy in it, which was the studio, a cutout of the studio of Thames Television and Magpie, which had starred, was it Susan Stranks, Mick Robertson, the guy who looked a bit like his hero, Mark Bolan, and Jenny Hanley. Do you remember her?
No, I don't, but I'm going to Google her, so hang on.
Well, you can play me the tune in a minute. One for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl and four for a boy, five for silver, six for gold, seven for a secret never to be told. Magpie, sorry about eight.
Right.
Eight to wish and nine a kiss. 10 is a bird you must not miss. And they had this wonderful magpie symbol, which was like a fat magpie. Brilliant programme. And it was which television company? Thames. Do you remember the Thames tune?
No, you're going to need to.
And it was on Talking Pictures, use it still.
Yeah, right.
And there was a Forces TV, which had some old Thames stuff, and they played the jingle, and I think they still do.
Right.
And it was a reflection of the buildings in London, and it had a reflection of the word Thames, and then that disappeared.
Yeah.
And it was a brilliant logo, very, very iconic.
Yeah.
And at the weekend, it was London Weekend Television. But this magpie model, my dad tried to find it in seven different shops, looking specially for me. And eventually, we went to the corner of Astley Street and King Street in Duckingfield, and there was a shop there, a newsagent, that finally had it. And that's how much I love my dad.
Yeah.
He tried everywhere to get me this model. And God knows where I put it now, but it's probably around somewhere. But the guy who was on earlier, Mel, talking about the Thunderbirds models.
Yes, Tracy Island.
I've got one, I've got two. I've got two twos, a blue one, mm-hmm. which I think is Corgi or Dinky, and a green one, which I bought more recently. And the real Thunderbird 2 is green. Okay. And if you shove the middle down and open the flap, there was a Thunderbird 4 in it. But when somebody's nicked that, so I've lost that. But you can't get them on eBay, I think.
Yeah.
But I my mate bought me a Tracy Island, but I never had a Thunderbird 5 because they were, like, enormous and they had noises and stuff. They didn't make the Thunderbird 5, which was plastic, in the cast iron version.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love Thunderbirds. It was my favourite programme. We've talked about this before, haven't we?
We have, actually, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, and Paul Parker died yesterday,
yes, I was going to say, we mentioned it yesterday.
How far off 100 was he?
Yeah, I think he was. He was 99,
wasn't he?
He was
99, but how many months would it take for him to be 100?
I'm not sure, but...
Can you look that up on Wikipedia for me? David Graham is his name.
Give me a second.
David Graham.
There we go, there he is there.
Yes, the lady.
July, so he was, yeah, he just turned 99.
He's quite a bit off then.
He was a wee bit off his letter from the king, yeah.
Yeah, his telegram. Is it a telegram or a letter these days?
I think...
Used to be a telegram, it used to be a telegram from the Queen, but I think it's probably an email. No, surely he doesn't. No, it must
not
be,
be an email. It can't be an
email. A crown on it.
I'd say it's going to be a letter.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But I don't know. I mean, if anybody's listening and you turned 100 and you got
somebody must be over 100.
You think so,
wouldn't
you?
You'd
think so.
That was that. Mm. And I also wanted to briefly touch on not so much dementia with my mother. She was bipolar. She went blind. She had two broken hips because one evening in the care home, they disturbed her sleep.
Right.
Gave her a coffee, forgot to put the barrier up on the bed, and she fell out and broke her hip. Oh. Then she was in hospital, and I went to see my sister while she was in hospital, mm-hmm. having been almost every day to see her. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, she'll be all right. When I got back, she'd gone. And I said, where's she gone? Oh, we've discharged her. I said, well, you're not allowed to discharge her without telling me, are you? Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. So they discharged her back into the care home, given her the wrong walking frame, and she fell and broke her other hip.
Oh,
and from that day onwards, she was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And she wasn't looked after too well in the next care home, to be honest.
Yeah.
One of the guys actually pulled her out of the toilet, smashed her against the wall, and sat her back on the toilet, and I was early, and I caught him. I said, what are you doing? He said, oh, you're early. Mm-hmm. I said, well, you do this every day, do you? I was absolutely furious.
Yeah, yeah.
I won't name the home, but, you know, that's the way some care homes treat people. I mean, I know she could be awkward, and she fought them a lot, and she calmed down tremendously when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But but they smashed a watch I bought her for her 80th birthday with a hammer. Can you believe that?
Oh, Peter, no.
And I went to the Quality Care Commission with that one and forced them to buy a new one. Mm-hmm. It was a lovely watch with big numbers so she could see the time.
Yeah.
So when they put her to bed at 7 p.m., which is 2 hours earlier than they should do, and she was diabetic, she couldn't read the time when they smashed the watch. So I got them to buy a new one. That's awful, isn't it?
Oh, Peter, that's awful. That's
and they stole a vase I gave her. Because every her birthday I buy her flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And they stole the vase. And it was in the care home. And I said, why is my mum's vase? Oh, it's not your mum's vase. I said, it is. It's got a sticker underneath that's slightly offset.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my vase. I said, no, it isn't. It's my mother's. And they used to steal money from everybody's room. And this guy I was talking about earlier used to bet on the horses with it. And he tuned my mother's radio from Radio 5, from Radio 4 to 5 Live to do the horse racing. I said, my mother would never listen to horse racing.
Yeah.
She'll listen to 5 Live in the evening, but she would never listen to horse racing. And I said, I had a radio on radios 2 and 4. And he was sat there betting with the money that he'd stolen from the people in the care home.
Awful.
He should have been sacked, that guy. He was awful.
Yeah. Well,
and he said, I'm going to marry your mother. I said, no way.
It's so stressful, isn't it? Because, you know, you trust these people.
I agree with Mike. He does a tremendous job.
Mm.
He looks after his wife, Margaret, and he's blind.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, take my hat off to him. and his detective work is brilliant. Because he's blind, his hearing is brilliant, and he picked up that I was Ed Bond.
Yeah.
It's not easy looking after people. And if they've got dementia,
yeah.
And I've got a friend whose mother has dementia, mm-hmm. and that's terrible. Mm-hmm. And I know another friend whose mother started to develop dementia just before she died.
Yeah.
And caring for someone is not easy, but it's worth its weight in gold. And they said in the care home that my mother didn't like food. Mm-hmm. But when I took her to Sutton Hall and when I took her to Luders in Aldgreave, mm-hmm. two magnificent places, she ate every blooming crumb.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with her appetite. It's just the food they give them in care homes is not brilliant, actually.
Yeah.
Some are. But when someone's bipolar, they're very limited into how many care homes you can go in.
Yeah.
And they're not cheap. 260 grand a year.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
It is. £26,000 a year.
Yeah.
In 10 years, 260 grand in care home fees. But luckily for us, because my mum was finally diagnosed bipolar and she'd been sectioned into a care home,
mm-hmm.
you get fully funded care. But they wouldn't backdate it, would they? And they wouldn't backdate her attendance allowance, which she should have been claiming, from at least the year 2000, if not before. So she lost 5 years of attendance allowance, everybody. So make sure you read the small print and claim it, because you're fully entitled to it.
Absolutely. Peter, I'm sorry that you had a bit of a rough experience, but thank you so much for giving me a call and sharing it with me. I really do appreciate it. And we're on to you now. I'm on to you. I'm going to remember names. I'm going to remember you. 16 minutes past three now. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences with dementia with me, because I appreciate it. It's quite a tough thing to talk about in a lot of ways. We spoke to Cliff and Kent at the start of the programme, and he spoke very movingly about his mum.
Yes, it's a tragedy, and it's a tragedy for everybody involved. From my experience, what happened is that my mother started to show signs that things were going wrong. And what it is really is that I think it's quite common with dementia, because I got to learn quite a bit about it, is that she was aware that she was probably losing aspects of her memory even before the family around her. They say that often the family, the people closest, are the last ones to really realise what's going on.
Yeah.
And her behaviour became, very, very strange, very guarded, because obviously the fear, the terror for some people is that, if I lose my memory, what's going to happen to me? And kind of fantasies of being taken away. And it's such a dreadful fear that it causes people to change their behaviour, become a bit suspicious of the people around them. And we knew things were going downhill. And then one day what happened is that I'd been speaking to my mum, and then I spoke to my brother shortly afterwards, and he said, "Oh, she's furious with you." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, you haven't spoken to her for a week." And I said, "I speak to her every day."
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, she's just been on the phone saying that you haven't spoken to her for weeks." And then we suddenly clicked and we realised that this was such a dramatic difference in the story that maybe we needed to sort of find out if there is going on anything with the memory. So we got to the GP, he did a short test, then we went to the memory clinic, they did a test, and they confirmed really after that there was all the evidence of dementia there. But we tried to support her as much as we could. In her home, she was managing really well, but then things started to go wrong with medication. She wasn't able to take any of her tablets and things, getting them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We had carers come in as much as we could, but then eventually even that got a bit impossible because she's started going out and getting lost. And we fortunately found her. She'd made her way to the hospital. She'd sometimes wave someone down, stopped a car, got in the car. And so eventually, reluctantly, against all her wishes, for her safety, we had to try and get her into a home. And that was very difficult for her, because although the people in the home had good intentions and they said that they knew all about dementia and everybody was trained for it, it was quite clear really that, in fact, the training wasn't that good for the staff. And so staff themselves could become personally agitated by her behaviour. She was definitely, from her childhood, she was quite traumatised as a child, but that translated very badly in dementia. And I used to go into before work and after work every day to support her and to try and talk to her and feed her and just do all the things that made her feel life was normal, because that was the one thing she feared was abandonment. So I stayed with her, and then unfortunately this was lockdown, and all of a sudden we were told we couldn't go in any longer to visit her, and that was catastrophic. She just was impossible in there from what we gather, and she had a fall and taken to hospital, and within about 3 weeks she had died. So it was painful for everybody involved and tragic. But what I would say to people, if you are dealing with anybody, trying to help or support anybody in your family, one thing I would really try and remember is that we get frustrated sometimes with someone with a memory loss situation because we almost think they're doing it deliberately. But it isn't really like that. Someone described it to me once very well. It's like the jigsaw of your life has been thrown on the floor and you're struggling around to pick up the pieces and put the story together, and it's so difficult for them.
That's a great analogy, but even isn't it?
Yeah. And even if you have to listen to things which don't make sense, or you find that person doing things which are obviously not right, it's so important to try and keep a calm way about you, because even if they can't understand or they don't remember what you're saying, what does get into them is your kindness. That kind of transcends, it goes through the memory difficulty, and even if they can't remember what you said or what you did when you were there, they'll be left with a feeling of fondness towards you. You need the patience of a saint, you need support, you need a lot of people around you to look after you as well, because it can be very challenging when you're dealing with something like that. And that's without all the sort of the medical issues that can come up, eating problems, just the general, you know, things that happen when people aren't really looking after themselves. You can put water in front of someone and you can say, "You must drink it, Mum," but you can't be sure if she's done it. And, you know, and eating gets very challenging. She's in my thoughts all the time, even now, and I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody. So I just hope everybody gets the support they deserve dealing with that problem.
Absolutely. It's such a cruel, I mean, it's a cruel disease for everybody, but the family in particular. My nanny had it, and what I find really difficult is that she was actually really happy. She was really happy in her life. And we'd have, as you described, they're really stupid conversations, but I just bought into it. I just talked to her as if they were fine and came away and thought, what have we just said? But she, like I say, she always came across very happy. But for the family, it's so tough to watch somebody get through that cliff, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I've heard different, if you've been on that journey, Lisa, then you just know how complicated it is. One thing that I have found out is that in my mum's case, she could be a bit of two different people sometimes. She was quite complicated, but in a lovely way, and she had a beautiful side to her, but she could be a bit difficult sometimes. And what I've found speaking to other people is that suddenly, if they've had problems all their life with their mum, that their mum could get dementia, and all of a sudden a part of the mum emerges which they don't recognise. It's so lovely.
Oh, really?
And in another instance, I've had people tell me that. But on the other hand also, it could be that somebody just becomes really, really difficult because they're just so distraught, they're so frightened. I would really love to see in this country so much more being done, because there's so many people who could be affected potentially. And if we don't become experts at this, it's such a tragedy, because it people do need to know how to cope with it. And also, people who get a diagnosis of dementia or fear they're getting it, they need someone to talk to as well, especially in those early stages, because they're so scared and they need someone to reassure them that there's going to be someone there for them, and that we've got your back, you know, we're going to stay with you and check in with you all the time and do everything we can to try.
I'd be keen to ask you about that, Trish, actually. Obviously, when you, you know, when you noticed that maybe something, everything wasn't all well with your mother, and you approached her about going to the GP, what was her reaction?
Yeah, she, it wasn't like her to rule things out completely, but she was a bit hesitant, and I tried to reassure her with honesty, because we didn't know what the situation was at that time either. And we said, just a memory check, just to see if there's anything going on, you know, and it won't be, there's nothing to it. They won't kind of examine you other than just ask you a few questions. And we went along with her and supported her at that. But you know, people may recognize this, but while she was there, they were asking her questions, and it was quite clear she was making up stories for them, and in order to get through. And I found that incredibly sad, because you don't want to see your mother or father, or anyone you love, struggling almost like they're in an interview, which they feel could dramatically alter their life and their quality of life. And it's so sad. But anyway, she got through that. And then, yeah, it was all right for a while. You allow yourself to think things are getting better, because every now and again, things pick up and suddenly things that little bit better. But unfortunately, with this, there is this continual average decline, and sometimes there can be some big drops as well. And each time, people say it's not like losing your mum or your dad in one go. It's spread over that time. You're losing them bit by bit over that period of time. I could, I do a bit of work now, obviously, where I do get the chance to speak to people. Some people come to me so that they know how to help their partner or whoever's affected psychologically, and that is where I think we really need the most support, because people, even working with them, I had to examine why things were going wrong in the care home, and there was some bad incidents, and what actually happened is, while most of the staff were really good and responsible, one or two would just get some kind of negativity towards my mum. It was like they weren't prepared to put up with her confusion and her rudeness, which undoubtedly they did have to put up with. But and I noticed in those situations that the levels of care were absolutely terrible. And I'd go in there and find that a meal from last night was still left in the room, and no one had gone in to help her. And that's where it's so heartbreaking, is that you just want the best, and you want to try and give that person every little bit of love and support you can. And it's terribly frustrating.
You must feel so helpless in that situation.
Yeah. And then when we got to lockdown, and they said I couldn't go in there anymore, and I tried everything to get in, and just went downhill quickly. And then after a fall, she was then rushed to hospital, and then in the hospital, crikey, I went in there, and even the staff didn't have masks on, and this was in the beginning of COVID, and I had a mask on, but they wouldn't let me in even to see her in the hospital, and I had to really work hard just to get to see her once. But I realized when I went in that even they had just left food away from her. She couldn't reach anything and wasn't able to help herself. So when someone is so helpless and vulnerable, we should be, in our families and also organizationally, we should be doing so much to ensure that person has the care they deserve and the dignity they deserve. And I'd like to see in this country much more in the way of responsible planning,
Absolutely.
So that people can get the support they need at these times.
Absolutely. It affects so, so many people. It really does. And I do appreciate you opening up about it, Cliff, because I know it's not always the easiest thing to talk about. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you as well, Lisa.
Cliff and Ken there, and his story that he shared with me a bit earlier on. 3:29 now.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Look at the news headlines this morning. Israel has imposed restrictions on civilian movements in the north of the country after it carried out airstrikes on Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon. A spokesperson said the order was in anticipation that Hezbollah would retaliate. An Israeli airstrike in the Lebanese capital Beirut killed at least 37 people on Friday. So Keir Starmer said his job is to do something about leaks coming from the government, which this week led to his chief advisor's salary being made public. Sources revealed to the BBC that Sue Gray now receives a salary of £170,000. That's more than the Prime Minister's paid. The social media platform X has agreed to comply with court orders in Brazil, where its services were suspended last month. Brazil is one of the platform's main markets with an estimated 20 million users. And Donald Trump has rejected calls for a second US presidential debate with his Democratic rival Kamala Harris in the run-up to November's election. Speaking at a rally in North Carolina, the Republican candidate said it was too late and that early voting was already underway. Ms. Harris hasn't accepted an invitation from CNN to hold a second debate with Mr. Trump. Andy Barwell's got the sport now.
A destructive performance from Daniel Dubois on the biggest night of his life. The IBF title holder knocked out the two-time unified world champion Anthony Joshua in round five of their heavyweight boxing clash at Wembley Stadium. And afterwards, Dubois said he still had to reach his full potential. How will Manchester City react today, having been joined level on points by Liverpool and Aston Villa in the Premier League title race? In fact, Liverpool are top on goal difference, although boss Arne Slot said it wasn't easy in beating Bournemouth 3-0 at Anfield. Villa fought back to defeat Wolverhampton Wanderers 3-1, and City's game in hand this afternoon looks to be a real blockbuster. It's against Arsenal at the Etihad Stadium. Rangers and Aberdeen reached the last four of the Scottish League Cup. Celtic faced Falkirk in the last of the quarter-finals. Cricket, England went 2-0 down in their five-match one-day international series, with Australia winning it headingly by 68 runs. Sunrisers lifted the women's Rachel Hayo-Flint trophy for the first time as they beat South East Stars by 27 runs. Today it's the turn of the men's 50-over final, with Somerset taking on Glamorgan at Trent Bridge. In Rugby Union's Premiership, there were wins for Leicester Tigers and for Saracens. Dragons were winners of the first Welsh derby of the new United Rugby Championship season. They defeated Ospreys. Lando Norris in the McLaren is on pole position for today's Singapore Formula One Grand Prix. And the Italian player Matteo Manassero on 18 under par leads by three shots going into the final round of golf's European Tour PGA Championship at Wentworth.
Live, live, Premier League Sunday.
Mikel Arteta to Arsenal is confirmed.
We were sad when he leaves. He's a ball for beyond a good manager.
Arsenal have confirmed the signing of Declan Rice.
Manchester City have agreed a deal to sign Erling Haaland.
Champions again. They've won it 4 years running.
I think Arsenal get even closer again.
The level is higher and higher.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Welcome to you, Manchester City against Arsenal.
Listen today from 12 on Five Live and BBC Sounds. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
Lisa McCormick.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
So we've been talking about coping with dementia this morning, and I know that's a topic that many of you have had experience in dealing with. Well, a charity in Northern Ireland has come up with a simple but potentially hugely useful idea to help, and it involves a wristband that someone suffering from the illness can wear. It then contains information that could help them get home if they become lost or confused. Well, I've been speaking to Mandy Corr from Age Concern Causeway. Give me a better idea about how this all worked.
So the bands are simply a blue wristband that people with dementia can wear. It worked with a QR code. So the QR code is scanned. When it's scanned for the first time, people register the band. The carer registers their name and then they register the person living with dementia's details. And then after that, the second time the QR code is scanned by any other mobile phone, a simple message comes up to say, my name is Mandy, I have dementia. If I'm lost or confused, this is my next of kin's contact details. And it simply gives the next of kin's name and a contact number. And it just means then that that person can be returned to their family as soon as possible without any distress to the person who's living with dementia and to the family, because we found that sometimes people living with dementia can't actually tell you their name or who their next of kin is or, in fact, where they live. So these bands will make sure that they get returned.
And I've seen this more than once, Mandy, and I'm sure you have as well. You know, if you're in any Facebook groups for your local area, once in a while you'll see a post, someone saying, I've got this person with me. Clearly they have dementia. They don't know where they're going. I don't know where they're going. Can anybody help? But this completely takes away any of that unknown.
Absolutely. We had one of our clients last year who actually left her own house, and unfortunately she wasn't found. And it was that sort of really hit home to us, that we needed to do something about this. We have so many people whose families are telling us that, you know, they leave the house and they're really scared that they won't come back again. So it's a real problem, especially with people living with dementia, just that issue that they wander, they just go off, and they're going for a purpose. But it's that not knowing if they'll return again. So it sort of takes that fear away for the person as well who has dementia. We took the bands around our groups. So we have dementia groups, and we took the bands around the groups and we showed the bands to them, and we said, what do you think? And they all loved them. They wanted to take one home with them that day, but I only had the one at that time. So I was like, look, I promise that I will get every one of you into one of these bands, you know. So it was something that I felt very passionately about as well, because my own mother had Alzheimer's as well. So, and we know, like, as a family, you know, that fear is always there. So it's just a safeguarding band that hopefully will make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's no doubt, I'm sure the reaction from the carers was absolutely amazing to it. In terms of the people suffering with dementia, are they happy to wear something that visibly says what's going on with them? Yeah.
I think so. We discussed that with them. So most of the people that we work with realise that they have dementia. Some of them don't. But the bands are something, they look like a watch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they're wearing them, they're soft. We made sure the material was, you know, soft, and it was nice to wear. So I don't think everybody that we have given one to are happy wearing them. We were round our groups and our one-to-ones there last week, and they all wanted to get a picture with their band on. So the most of them are really happy with these, you know, and it keeps them safe, and they know that, you know. Yeah. Most of them know that there is that possibility that they might not remember where they're coming back to. So the band sort of just gives them that wee bit of security as well.
Definitely. I know the problem these days for a lot of charities is with the cost of living, and it's awful to say I'm sick, Senna. I'm not sick, Senna. Of course I'm not, but it's the reality for many people. Charities are suffering as a result of it, and these presumably don't come cheap.
No. Well, the bands themselves were quite cheap to produce. Right. It's the technology behind them. So it was the work that we had to do because they're all individually QR coded. I just thought, right, I need to get funding for these. So we get actually funding through the PCSP, which is a local policing charity. And then we got funding through the Rainy Day Fund, which was really as housing. And, you know, we were able to produce, at the minute we have 1,000 of them, but with Radius we're going to have another 3,000 of them. So, it is all about how, you know, cost effective things are as well. So, you know, the bands are relatively cheap to produce, and it's now the promoting them, making sure that people in the general public know what the blue band stands for. So we've been trying to do a lot of work around, you know, the public knowing that the bands represent somebody living with dementia.
Yeah. And what sort of work are you doing with that? I mean, because that's the key, I guess, isn't it? Reaching a wider audience.
Yeah, well, we're working with the GP surgeries, social workers. We're working with TransLink. We are working with the PSNI. And they are happy to promote the bands throughout their organisations as well. We're also going into local cafes. We're just putting our posters up in there so that people recognise what the blue band is.
Brilliant, brilliant. I mean, it's such a good idea. Where did the idea come from originally?
So it came from Avon and Somerset Police Service. They actually set it up over there, and it actually, the constable that was doing it there, I contacted him and I said, look, you know, I love this idea. They actually had a tracker in theirs, but because we're a charity, we couldn't do that. So I had I sort of racked my brains for quite a while going, trying to find out how could I do this without actually having a tracker. And the easiest thing to use was the QR coding. Now, I'm not technically minded, but I got somebody who was technically minded and was able to show me. I was like, show me how to do this QR coding. How can I make this work? And of course, when you talk to the right people, it's really easy. So we got the QR code and done, and it's linked into our website. It took a little while, but you know, to get there. But we were adamant that we were definitely going to do it.
Yeah, but the difference in this, I mean, I can imagine a tracker is expensive to install in a wristband. You've obviously done it in a simpler way. So actually, this is something that potentially could be taken nationwide.
Absolutely. You know, there's no reason why this can't be rolled out. It is a simple idea. It's cost effective. But, you know, the impact that it will have on people's lives will be massive.
Absolutely. I mean, you've already said that you cared for your own mother. I mean, how much more peace of mind would this have given you if you'd had one of these for her?
No, absolutely. Because every time, you know, you left the house and you were going to work, you were always waiting for that phone call to say, you know, we found your mum, or, you know, you just don't know. And we always had that fear that mum would leave the house and not come back again. And it would just give us the peace of mind that, you know, if she was out and about and somebody found her, that they would recognise, one, that she had dementia, and two, that she could get back to us as soon as possible. You know, we were working with the PSNI, and they said the number of times that they have come across somebody who can't tell them what their name is, who they are, where they're going, and then the distress of taking somebody with dementia to a police station, and then, you know, the distress that's causing the family too, because who knows, you know, if you're away for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, the more time that they're away and they're lost, you know, that just increases the family's, you know, tension. Where are they? Are they safe? Who are they with? You know, so this is why we thought, you know, these bands will be something that will be cost effective and that will get people back to their homes.
Definitely. Honestly, it's such a good idea. You know, we charity, you know what I mean? Like this We Charity in Northern Ireland is in this really groundbreaking thing. And Amanda, I really hope we speak to you again, because somebody's heard it and said, you know what, we could do that as well, and has taken it on. Cause I think it's such, my nanny had Alzheimer's as well. We lived in that fear for a long time. And I just think, honestly, this could just be so life changing for so many people.
Yeah, we're so proud of the band. We really, really are. And, you know, it was a real passion of mine to bring these bands to Northern Ireland. But I just hope that it can be rolled out and that, you know, people can use them and it keeps people safe. And it just, you know, that's what my hope is, that it reaches as many people as possible.
Definitely. Let's see if we can help play a part in that in some small, small way. Man, it's so lovely to talk to you this morning. Thank you so much for joining me.
No problem. Thank you very much.
That's Mandy Corr from Age Concern Causeway talking about how they've introduced those wristbands to help dementia sufferers. Well, Angela McLaughlin's been helping her friend through his own dementia diagnosis since 2016. Don McCart's a former professional golfer. He's gone missing on a number of occasions over the years. So I asked Angela about what the last few years have been like and how much of a difference that wristband idea could make.
So I've known Don since 1995, when he came to play golf at the British Senior Open at Royal Portrush. And I noticed probably about 2 years prior to his diagnosis that there were very, very certain signs of the disease. He had gone to his GP over in England, and so that took place over a period of about 2 years. And it was dismissed as, oh, it's just old age. It's, oh, yes, I do that. I walk into a room and forget what I came in for. And eventually, in 2016, he was finally diagnosed following an MRI and following the whole assessment process that had to take place. And that was in 2016, and here we are 8 years on, and obviously his condition has progressed. Dawn's diagnosis is of mixed dementia, which is actually apparently slower to diagnose because it is actually the combination of both Alzheimer's and vascular dementia.
Right. So that sort of goes some way to explaining why it maybe wasn't caught quite so early on. I mean, that's a very stressful, that must have been a very stressful time for you both, Angela.
It was stressful because obviously I'm living here in Northern Ireland and Dawn was living independently in England, which he continued to do. And it meant then, you know, on the day that he actually underwent one of the key assessments, I was actually working and I had just finished a meeting and I got a phone call from the practitioner to confirm that, yes, it was very likely that he had dementia. And I was devastated, both for him, for his family, for me, for everyone. It was very, very difficult.
Yeah. Then obviously you've got a lot to think about at that point, that you have an actual reason why this is happening, and you know it's going to get worse as well. So what happened next? How did you begin to tackle that?
It was a very slow process, and from the outset, Don was in denial about his diagnosis. I made the journey over to England and we had the more formal appointment with the dementia specialist. And he then confirmed at that meeting. So whilst I was expecting a diagnosis of dementia of some sort, I wasn't expecting it to be one of mixed dementia. So when he said, first of all, yes, the scans and the process that we've undergone by way of assessment indicates that there is vascular dementia, that was a whammy, that was a blow. But then the double blow came whenever we were advised that he actually had Alzheimer's as well. And that was very difficult to take. When we left the consultation, Don immediately, as is his nature, he immediately shrugged that off and he said, I'm just going to go ahead and live my life and do the stuff. All I want to do is play golf. And I thought, well, if that works for you and that's how you cope, go for it. And that's how he has been. And still to this day, and obviously he was less cognitively aware, but to this day, he still is completely oblivious to his condition. And when he hears the word dementia, talked about, he goes, dementia. You know, so it happens to other people. It hasn't happened to him.
I mean, it's great that he deals with it that way, but obviously, you know, it's much, much harder on you because, you know the reality of what he's going through, and that must be a huge worry.
It's a big worry because at the outset, there are all the things that need to be thought about and that need to be considered. And obviously, I accompanied Dawn to tell his son and his daughter and his daughter-in-law. And that was difficult for them. That was a shock. Then there were the arrangements that needed to be considered. Dawn was very reluctant to do that at the beginning. You know, things like setting up a power of attorney, things, you know, like tapping into resources that might be available. He wasn't interested in any of it because he was in complete denial of it. It's very hard to bring Dawn along on that journey through it. And it became more difficult as time passed because obviously then he began to lose the ability to really make the proper judgments about things.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very daunting time for carers. And my heart goes out to people who are in that position, especially at that point, at that first point of diagnosis, and then thinking, what are we going to do? How do we do it? How do we go about it? Who can we get to help us?
Yeah. What is the support network like, Angela? You know, have you found many resources on this journey?
I have struggled, and I was actually reading through some information from various well-known dementia organisations. And the stories and the blogs that people write are very humbling because people in the main have all experienced the same obstacles, the same difficulties. My experience of it, and obviously it's been a bit more disjointed because Dawn was in England and I was here. And then I suppose lockdown really changed things.
Yeah.
And I noticed then that John actually wouldn't be able to manage through lockdown on his own. He had been living independently, albeit with a bit of difficulty up until that point. So when I brought him here to stay temporarily, and he has sort of gone backwards and forwards to England in between times, so it's a bit more disjointed and a bit more difficult. But the situation for me now, and I think others share this concern, is the lack of meaningful, practical support in the community. And that's why Causeway Age Concern have actually, they've been a blessing, and I sit on board now as well. And I think it's amazing the amount of activities that they provide with very little funding, and you know, the amount of support that they're happy to provide. Things like trying to arrange respite, being a carer for someone with dementia is physically and emotionally draining. And it's all day, every day. There's no remission from dementia. There's no remission period. It just continues to progress. And it's very hard then to find somewhere that you can have respite, either for a few hours, a few days. I haven't had a break in 5 years because all my time is taken up trying to look after Dawn's needs.
And then inevitably your health begins to suffer at that situation as well. I think for something that affects so many people, it does astound me when I hear that the resources aren't there. But also, you know, and I spoke to Mandy from Age Concern Causeway earlier, and the work they're doing is just absolutely phenomenal. And clearly, you know, really, really appreciated by the people like yourself.
It's invaluable, the work that organisations like Age Concern Causeway do, because they are reaching out to local people in the community. And I think when that happens, people who are living with dementia, their carers, they're more ready to reach out to an organisation rather than, say, to a very large umbrella organisation. They will reach out to that local group.
Yeah.
And there's also that they're made to feel at ease, they're made to feel comfortable and reassured. And on a local level, it's very much about tapping into the individual needs of that person. What are their likes and their dislikes? And I'm still struggling to find sort of a golf buddy, if you like, for Dawn, because that's his passion, has been his lifelong passion. Mm. And so it can be a struggle just to get the support networks. He attends the Friday group on a Friday afternoon, which is run by Causeway Age Concern, and he enjoys that. That's a window of 2 hours that I have. So I'm running around the house frantically thinking, will I do housework? Will I do shopping? What will I do? Where will I go?
Yeah, it's not a lot, is it? Obviously, there are so many things to think about when a loved one has dementia. But one of the main reasons we were talking to Age Concern Causeway is because of these wristbands that they've produced to help someone if they leave their house and they can't get back. I mean, how much of a comfort is it to you knowing that Dawn has one of these?
It's very reassuring. Over 60% of people with dementia will wander, and a highest percentage of them will actually wander repeatedly. They tend to get lost and confused about the surroundings. It's very distressing for the person with dementia, and it's a very worrying time for the carer. It's not without risk. It can be dangerous. On occasions, you know, it has been known to be life-threatening. So the carer carries the burden of those risks, and it weighs very heavily on the shoulders of carers. So I believe that any innovation, that any tool in the toolbox of options that we can provide is going to be an invaluable resource. And I am just so pleased that Mandy spearheaded this and took the initiative and decided I'm going to go with this and I'm going to provide it for not only, obviously, the service users of services that Causeway Age Concern provide, but also for other people out in the community there who suffer from dementia or their carers. And it's so simple.
This is it. And I said this to her as well. I mean, for a wee charity in Northern Ireland to be doing something that is actually quite groundbreaking is so impressive. And I really hope that they manage to roll it out even further, because, you know, there's a firsthand account of how much more reassuring it is to you to know that if Dawn did go wandering, it's such, all you need to do is somebody with a phone, look at the wristband and they can contact you.
Absolutely. You know, the wristband says, I have dementia. If you think I need help, scan the QR code. And the simplicity of it is incredible. And it almost makes you think, why didn't I think of that? And there are so many different things and items that are available if you look on the internet. But for someone like Mandy to think, actually, I need one that I know will work, that can be relied upon, that is safe. It's safe for the wearer, it's safe for the care, and it's safe for the organisation. Mm. So that's quite innovative. And interestingly, since the launch just this week and since for television and radio coverage, I've been approached by a number of people, where can I get one? And I think that in itself speaks volumes.
Mm.
They may not be service users of some of the activities that are provided by the group. That doesn't matter. They can still avail of it. I had an inquiry from someone, can I get this in Donegal?
Wow.
So, and I do understand that other trusts across the board are interested in replicating the scheme, which would be ideal.
Yeah. 100%. It really is. It just takes that one thing off your mind when you've got so much else to think about, Angela, doesn't it? I take my hat off to you, because honestly, the work of a carer is just, it never ends, as well you know, and you know, just, you're doing a fantastic job, and I'm sure Dawn is very, very appreciative to have you.
He's very well looked after, and you know, he still hankers to get out on the golf course. He still hankers to get home, and that's a common feature. I want to go home. And he is appreciative. I think he understands, and he knows how well looked after he is. Sometimes I don't think he is, but it's the nature of it. But the wristband, yes, it's absolutely going to be an invaluable tool in ensuring that Dawn and others like him are safe and providing the reassurance to carers, you know, because the fact of the matter is they do go wandering. They lose that sense of environment, spatial awareness, their sense of surroundings, and it's so easy to become lost. In Dawn's mind, when he has vanished, he thinks he knows exactly where he wants to go. And he still has quite a good sense of direction. So in his head, he knows how to get there. The thing is, it's the memory loss. So setting out to do something and then becoming easily distracted. And then that's when the confusion kicks in.
Yeah.
And of course, while he's deciding to walk in to Coleraine from the golf course, carrying his golf clubs, all 7 miles of it, I am frantic with worry. And that has happened a few times. So if he'd had the wristband, and if the person or persons who had seen him had recognised that, life would have been so much easier.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, he's got it now. So that's one little tiny thing off your mind. Angela, it's been so lovely to hear from you this morning. Thank you so much for joining us to share your story.
You're very welcome.
Caring for her friend Dawn, Angela McLaughlin there. Dawn has had dementia since 2016. Now, coming up after the news at 4 o'clock, it's the latest edition of Access All from BBC Sounds. We've been in the state of Georgia in the US ahead of the presidential election. Well, our reporter Jordan Dunbar has been telling me what the situation's like there. It's a big swing state for them. And we'll also take a look ahead to the WSL action later on today with Wales all-time top goal scorer Helen Ward.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 4 o'clock. This is Anna Cunningham. The boxer Daniel Dubois has retained his IBF World Heavyweight title, knocking out the two-time champion Anthony Joshua. 96,000 fans watched the All-British World title fight at Wembley Stadium. Dubois' father, Dave, said he always had faith in his son.
Unbelievable. You know, I'm so proud to be a part of something as mega as this. And I'm so proud that he delivered, as he said he was. He said he will knock him out. He did it in the fifth. So I always knew he could do it. And he's shown the world he's the real deal.
The Crown Prosecution Service says it reviewed possible charges against the former Harrods boss Mohammed Al-Fayed twice when he was alive, but concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. Lawyers representing women who say they were raped or sexually assaulted by the billionaire have had 150 new inquiries since a BBC documentary aired last week revealing the allegations. Sir Keir Starmer has said it's his responsibility to do something about leaks coming from Number 10. Speaking to The Observer ahead of the Labour Party conference, he said leaks damaged everybody. Our political correspondent Alex Forsyth is in Liverpool.
Because of the week that the party's had, this week we've had all of that drip drip constantly of stories about, you know, the gifts of clothing, the gifts of spectacles, the tickets for the football matches, the pay of Sue Gray. I think that has just set quite a difficult tone going into this conference, and there's like a consciousness that they need to find a way to deal with that so that they can get on with talking about what it is that they want to, which is what Labour plans to do in government.
Israel says it's restricted gatherings in the north of the country ahead of any possible retaliation by Hezbollah. Earlier, Israel carried out widespread airstrikes in southern Lebanon. Andrea Tenenti, a spokesperson for the UN peacekeeping mission in the Lebanese capital Beirut, said there were fears that they're on the brink of a wider conflict.
Definitely the situation now is really concerning, and the escalations of these days also very